Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Stuff happened that I was able to catch. And thanks again, Agnes, for everything. And time for me, and we've got a bit of just rock and roll to do the weekend. So here's Lowell George reminding you to...
This is a top to, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
oh,
11,
and most of
11.
And amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody, welcome aboard Foxed Up here for a Thursday night or Friday morning or Friday afternoon, all depending on where you reside blah, 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 on this beautiful blue marble, such that it still is bringing the old, you know, Foxed Up to a wrap for the week as we go into the Australian weekend. What are we doing? Tell you, it's been one of those weeks, as you all know, with all the funky website issues, which were just about back. I had to take a pause in the reconstruction to prepare for doing show stuff, so I'm really shooting for the next, you know, 24 hours for it all to be back, I really hope. the nightmare is soon over, my friends. But, oh, my friends, I just used a mechanism. Wah! I need something to rinse my mouth out with. you know, as I was getting ready to do today's show, my good neighbor, who those of you in the chat room have gotten to know recently as Juggernaut, came by this morning, and I'm sitting there going, you know, what am I going to play today? And I was showing him the drive of, you know, 25,000 songs or whatever. And I said, you know, it really can be hard to just go and pick a track some days. And it's amazing. With all the music that I've got, I can still end up going to some of the same things. You end up kind of going to old friends a lot. And so I've ended up doing that again today. Just because, you know, it's my Friday. I felt like rocking it up a little bit. And so going to play some Black Crowes. Just because I love the Black Crowes. Thanks to a good friend of mine who no longer walks the mortal coil, who reintroduced me to them a few years back. And I just love this album, Lions. And you might remember the edit that I did a couple years ago when Mayor Rocky Anderson had that great speech, that whole No More, No More speech, where I did the edit over soul singing. So we've got that for a little bit later, just because it's such a fun and happy song, and it's been such a bizarre week with everything. I figured, you know, I just needed some good, happy, kind of rocking, kind of, you know, just kicking it out, letting it loose. And and no surprise, Tim from LA is going, but John, what about Rush? I will have to play some Rush in one of these shows in the future here, mate. I haven't played any Rush in a while. And it would be good to revisit. I want to hear the new record. I've been reading some really good stuff on the new Rush album. I don't know exactly how new it is, but I've been hearing some really great things about it. For another night. The track that opens up Lions, now this is just an assumption for me. There was a time that the Black Crowes toured with Jimmy Page and Robert Plant. And Jimmy Page became a huge fan of the Black Crowes while they were on the road, and so he got into the habit of playing with the opening band. And he'd strap on and just be another guitar player in the band, the Black Crowes. And so it ended up being, they had such a good time that they actually did an entire tour of the Black Crowes with Jimmy Page just as like an extra guy. And there's a really great live record out there of the show. And it's one of those things, you either have to be a Black Crowes fan or a Led Zeppelin fan, or both. You might not really, you know, think it's that awesome unless you're a bit of a fan, but it is something to behold. But this track here, just the opening of it, this is just one of those guitar to 11 moments that I just absolutely love. And there is no doubt in my mind that this track was influenced by the experience that the band had having played for an extended period of time with the legendary Jimmy Page. And I've just always loved this. And you'll hear at the very beginning, you hear the engineer go, "All right, everybody, quiet." But it's really, really, really small because the guitar is really, really, really loud. So it's that classic, this is a band recorded in a room. We've had this conversation before. You know, so much of the music recorded today is individual instruments one at a time. This is a band recording in a room, and you can hear it because you can kind of feel the room kind of pulsating from the sound pressure level. So to kick you off into your weekend, the Black Crowes off the album Lions. way to drop the song title from your brain, John. Midnight from the Inside Out. That's the name of it. So without further ado, the Black Crowes. Hit it, Agnes. We'll be right back. that's just raw genius. I never get tired of that song. I just love that ripping guitar. It's just awesome. It's just awesome. And, you know, it's one of those moments where I really wish that we were running at stereo in a bit higher bandwidth so that you folks could just really, really crank it up, because that is a band, you know. That just so is a band. In all the best things, you know. And that Lions record is just really something to behold. It's a great record. All kinds of funny tunings and all those things that I dig. And guys that can play, you know. And it's a great example of a guy who does not have very much of a vocal range. He really doesn't. It's pretty limited. But by the use of clever phrasing and inflection, you don't miss it. And he does a hell of a lot with a limited range. And I think that's a real talent as well. But before we get into newsy stuff, I got a few things to do. Got one more. And this, I think, is a little bit of a head-on radio network kind of favorite going back. And anytime I hear this song, I'll just always think of Rocky Anderson. And this is just, I just think this is a really happy song, and I guess this could also be sent out to the Obama campaign for the energy that he's been able to get from people and the positivity, and I dig it. So here's just a good old favorite, and I know Gail will be rocking out at work. I know she loves this song. Soul Singing, The Black Crowes, off Lions as well. Roll it, Agnes.
I've been down, cascading in blue without a sound. Now I've traded my black feathers for a crown. So feed me milk and honey, lay me down. Lay me down. Look around. Show me holy places not yet found. Let's disappear and we'll hide underground. We'll get
good one. It's a good one. And yeah, Tim, I think we're overdue for some Rush. I'll correct that next week. I promise. Now, where are we going to go first? Gene sent me this, and it ties into a report that I was seeing some coverage of in the past week here in Australia. And I talk about this all the time. Every time we have a new environmental model come out, the new environmental model always seems to prove that the most dire versions of the previous model have been overshot, and that things are accelerating constantly. And I mean, if this isn't enough to convince some people that the changes taking place on this planet are not real and severe, the fact that, you know, what were signs are now becoming, you know, like huge banner ads, you know, they're like billboards. Seems that it's being discovered that the reason why a lot of these models are off, and you can find there's a post on this at a blog called realclimate.org, and it's climate science from climate scientists. It's quite a good blog. And during the 70s and 80s, there was a not properly recorded method change in the way ocean temperatures were being recorded. So there is some kind of cooling trend in the 70s and 80s that is a little out from, you know, slightly doesn't make sense. And it kind of has to do with, at that time, the way temperatures were being measured. Now, in the report that was on ABC TV the other night, that's been discovered, is not only are the ocean's temperatures warmer than we thought, but they're warmer than we thought to 700 meters below the surface. Now, you have to think about that. We have this huge layer of warmer water sitting on top of the world's oceans. As temperatures rise, the polar sheets continue to melt. You know, when there's the change from ice to water, there's actually more heat generated due to reflection, because it's no longer this bright white shiny thing that converts virtually none of the energy into heat and reflects it all. And the fact that these temperatures are being recorded in this really thick upper layer of the oceans is causing, you know, yet more concern. And that it might be explaining why the models keep being off, but they're always off in the same way. They're always, you know, too conservative. They're never showing, you know, it's always worse than the worst case scenario. And it continues to happen. It never changes. And it's a real worry. Now, got to find this link real quick. If you haven't noticed, the Huffington Post, which I happen to really dig, they, in the past couple of weeks, have actually launched a green blog in conjunction with the rest of the site, which has been really, really good. Now, what I'm trying to find here now, and of course I can't seem to find it when I want to find it, the floods that just hit Iowa. What if I were to tell you that the destruction and damage of those floods was exacerbated because of man? And you're like, what? And I'm not blaming, you know, these floods on climate change. Now, climate change probably is a factor in the severity, the timing, all of that. Now, the reason why the damage and destruction is due to man is because most of Iowa, the geology has been completely re-engineered by man. All the grasslands are gone, right? All the grasslands, bye-bye, no more grasslands, right? Drained fields with underwater plumbing. So nature's mechanisms for dealing with rains of this order no longer exist. Right? I mean, are you following me on this? Because of agriculture and various other things, the land has been changed so drastically. Here we go. If you go to the Huffington Post and over at the kind of to the right-hand side of the masthead, you'll see a little link called Green, and it takes you to their really, really good Green blog, and it's kind of just a sub-blog of the Huffington Post. Looks the same, but a green color scheme and same layout. But anyway, Iowa flooding could be an act of man, experts say. This is from the Washington Post. As the Cedar River rose higher and higher, and as he stacked sandbags along the levee protecting downtown Cedar Falls, Kamiar Eshian, a college professor and city council member, kept asking himself the same question. What is going on? The river would eventually rise 6 feet higher than any flood on record. Further downstream in the Cedar Rapids, the river would break the record by more than 11 feet. Eshian, who's director of an environmental center at the University of Northern Iowa, suspects that this natural disaster wasn't really all that natural. He points out that the heavy rains fell on a landscape radically re-engineered by humans. Plowed fields have replaced tall grass prairies. Fields have been meticulously drained with underground pipes. Streams and creeks have been straightened. Most of the wetlands are gone. Floodplains have been filled and developed. We've done numerous things to the landscape that took away these water-absorbing functions, he said. Agriculture must respect the limits of nature. Officials are still trying to understand all the factors that contributed to Iowa's flooding, and not everyone has the same suspicion as Eshian. For them, the cause is obvious. It rained buckets and buckets for days on end. They say the changes in land use were lesser factors in what was really just a case of meteorological bad luck. I don't necessarily really buy into that. Maybe a bit of bad luck with the weather, but the entire state has been so re-engineered. I mean, straightening rivers? Straightening rivers? What? You need to have them all look like grids on a map? I mean, what? Why are we straightening rivers? Right. But some Iowans who study the environment suspect that changes in the land both recently and over the past century or so have made Iowa's terrain not only highly profitable but also highly vulnerable to flooding. They know it's a hard case to prove, but they hope to get Iowans thinking about how to reduce the chances of a repeat calamity. I sense that the flooding is not a result of the 500-year event, said Jerry DeWitt, director of the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State University. We're farming closer to creeks, farming closer to rivers, without adequate buffer strips. The water route moves rapidly from the field directly to the surface water. Corn alone will cover more than a third of the state's land surface this year. The ethanol booms that began 2 years ago encouraged still more cultivation. Between 2007-2008, farmers took 106,000 acres of Iowa land out of Conservation Reserve Program, which pays farmers to keep farmland uncultivated, according to Lyle Assel, a special assistant for agriculture at the and the environment with the state's Department of Natural Resources. The land, if left untouched, probably would have been covered with perennial grasses and deep roots that help absorb water. Why man continues to think that we can, you know, harness the power of Mother Nature? It's, again, just this completely just ludicrous concept. The basic hydrology of Iowa has been changed since the coming of the plow. By the early 20th century, farmers had installed drainage pipes under the surface to lower the water table and keep water from pooling in what otherwise could be valuable farmland. More of this drainage tilting has been added in recent years. The direct effect is that water moves quickly from the farmland to the stream and rivers. We've lost 90% of our wetlands. 90%! You think that's not going to have an effect? 90%! Are you kidding? Crop rotation may also play a subtle role in the flooding. Farmers who may have once grown a number of crops are now likely to stick to just corn and soybeans, annual plants that don't put down deep roots. And it would be deep-rooted plants that would help fight this kind of thing. Another potential factor is sediment. We're actually seeing rivers filling up with sediment. So the capacity of rivers has changed, Assell said. He said that in the 1980s and 1990s, Iowa led the nation in flood damage year after year. This landscape wasn't ready for the kind of deluge that hit Iowa in May and early June. Central and eastern portions of the state received 15 inches of rain that came on top of previous rains that had left the soil saturated. Worse, the rains came at the tail end of an unusually cool spring. Farmers had delayed planting their crops. The deluge struck a nearly naked landscape of small plants and black dirt. With that volume of rain, you're going to have flooding. There's just no way around it, said Donna Duberke, a meteorologist with the National Weather Services in the Quad Cities. It's not just because someone put in a parking lot. The rising Mississippi River is expected to peak this week, threatening towns and farmland north of St. Louis as floodwaters continue to move down the river. So far, flooding and severe weather have killed at least 24 people in three states and injured 106, forced the evacuation of about 40,000 and driven corn prices to record highs. You know, I definitely think that there's something to this idea. If you remove 90% of the prairie grasslands in a state like Iowa, and you do the things that they have done to manipulate the land, the natural systems that would be able to deal with this kind of rain have been removed. So then it's left up to all the man-made systems, which are going to be puny in comparison, absolutely puny in comparison. You know, I just really wonder what the hell goes on in these people's brains when they go, nah, we couldn't possibly have done it. Man doesn't do things badly. Now, here's another one of those things that's just a real worry. I don't know if this has been kind of everywhere, that the world population's set to hit 7 billion by 2012. Population is a problem. We have allowed mechanized farming, and in the industrial age, has allowed us to maintain a population on this planet that the planet would not otherwise be able to maintain. So, as you know, and I go running, screaming like an idiot, you know, around the house every time I see a population going, keep the economy going, you gotta have kids, have one for the country. We had that with the last government we had here. Have one for the country. That is one of those things that goes behind that concept of sustainable growth, which is a misnomer. I mean, there is no such thing as sustainable growth. That's a fraud. So, yeah, to continue, you know, this over-consumerist free market nonsense that we've been doing globally for years, you constantly need more consumers and more consumers and more consumers. Well, with the things that we're facing on this planet, the food shortages, the fuel shortages, and the fuel shortages are just going to lead to more food shortages. But see, the good sign in all this is the fact that they're saying that growth is slowing. This would be a good thing. Now, you'll probably hear people come, you'll hear individual governments, you know, come out and say, we're not having enough kids. Have one for the country. Need a bun in the oven for the nation. And I think that's just insane. And from the link that Gene sent me from AOL News, projection, world population at 7 billion in 2012, but growth slowing. The world's population will reach 7 billion in 2012, even as the global community struggles to satisfy its appetite for natural resources, according to a new U.S. government prediction. There are 6.7 billion people in the world today. The United States ranks third with 304 million behind China and India, according to projections released Thursday by the Census Bureau. The world's population surpassed 6 billion in 1999, meaning it will take only 13 years to add a billion people. By comparison, the number of people did not reach 1 billion until 1800, said Carl Hobb, a demographer at the Population Reference Bureau. It didn't reach 2 billion until 130 years later. You know, just like I talk about the environmental models, how they continue to see, you know, accelerate, you know, reproduction is a feedback loop too. and it tends to, you know, accelerate. I can't even respond to that on the air, Agnes. where was I? Hobbs said that medical and nutritional advances in developing countries led to a population explosion following World War II. Cultural changes are slowly catching up, with more women in developing countries going to school and joining the workforce. That is slowing the growth rate, though it is still high in many countries. The global population is growing by about 12% each year. The Census Bureau projects that the growth rate will decline to 0.5% by 2050. By then, India will have surpassed China as the most populous country. The Census Bureau updates projections each year on a variety of global demographic trends, including fertility and mortality rates and life expectancy. U.S. life expectancy has surpassed 78 years for the first time, the National Center for Health Statistics announced last week. The new census report comes amid record-high oil and gasoline prices, fueled in part by growing demand from expanding economies in China and India. And I find it interesting, you know, China's had the whole one baby thingy for, you know, policy for years. And I guess it seems to be having the effect that they were looking for, because China saw the overpopulation problem before most people did. And, you know, say what you will, the one child per family policy probably was smart. And, you know, I know that there are people that are going to say, oh, you know, it's me, all these, you know, only children. What's the alternative? You know, what's the alternative? I mean, imagine if China over the last, you know, what, five decades, whatever that policy has been in place, if they had been breeding like, you know, people in the United States. They'd be, I mean, you know, they're already having, you know, capacity issues and whatnot. And I mean, you know, there's the environmental record, and, you know, there's the human rights record, and, you know, there's the Tibetans, and, you know, all that kind of thing. But, you know, there are times you have to even look at a nation that you have problems with and look at a policy that they put in place for very good concrete reasons that seems to have had the desired effect. Now, it seems, Tim, interesting comment. He goes, you know, allow women to be in charge and watch the population drop. Yeah, because women would be given control over their own bodies. I think you're spot on there. Population is a massive problem, and I mean, hopefully the sign of it pulling back will continue. globally, really. I mean, you know, we're already bursting at the seams when it comes to our ability to keep the world population fed and fueled up. And that fueled up is so tied into the being fed. You know, I keep seeing, you know, discussions in television news and whatnot about all these different issues. The war, petrol prices, food prices, you know, housing prices, all these things. But yet, they're always talked about in isolation. When, in reality, they're all directly connected. You know, the war has exacerbated the oil supply, which is already running low due to peak oil. We have the forecasters who are manipulating those markets. And because our agriculture system globally is so dependent on petrochemicals for both fueling the machines and actually creating the chemical fertilizers, which is just insanity that they're still using anyway, as the phosphates all go running off into the groundwater and into the, you know, so that, you know, we end up poisoning our waters, creating more dead zones in the Gulf Coast and other places around the planet. But we keep talking about things in isolation, and I think that it's a tactic to keep from getting anywhere constructive. And overpopulation is part of this whole equation. We've got too many people needing and using way too much energy, wasting energy, using dirty energy, in a population that a planet cannot maintain unless by artificial means. And those artificial means are the petrochemicals used to drive farm production. Ah! And I, every day in the news here, it's probably the same thing in the States. It's just, you know, all about people at the gas pump. All about people at the gas pump. You know, all this, everybody going, you know, I can't believe it's so expensive. And, like, here, the opposition, all they can keep talking about is telling the federal government to take 10 cents off of the petrol tax. Which is just, you know, it's a cheap political shot, you know. It's easy to say, you could drop petrol prices by 10 cents a liter right now if you wanted to. See, we're making you look bad. But they won't look at the situation that those petrol taxes are income that pay for other services. And to actually go, yeah, you can go and pull some of the tax back. But that 10 cents that's been pulled off is going to become more and more meaningless as the price continues to rise. You know, so when it's 10 cents and you're at $1.70 a liter, okay, it seems like something that you might go down to $1.60 a liter. But, you know, in a year's time, when we're at, say, $3, $3.50 a liter, is that 10 cents going to make all that much difference? I mean, right now it scores a cheap political point. I mean, this has been going on for weeks over here in Australia. You know, and I like, just get so sick of it. And I was really happy once when Rudd was confronted about the oil price thing, and he turned around and he said, you know, not invading Iraq would have helped. You know, not invading Iraq would have helped. And that's a real answer. That is a real answer. But, you know, some of the punditocracy had to come around sitting there going, see, he just doesn't care about average Australians. That's not the case. I mean, cheap political point scoring. If the whole thing had, if it was reversed, if the opposition was in power and vice versa, and this whole thing was reversed, those that are in opposition now would be screaming bloody murder that the Labor government was trying to take crucial income out of the system. And it is crucial income. It is crucial income. Because it actually goes to pay for roads and things. And, you know, I'd really, really anger people because I'd say, I think the petrol taxes should be higher. Yes, I think they should be higher. Why? Why? A couple of reasons. One, the higher the price of petrol goes, the more we're going to see people turning in their SUVs for fuel-efficient cars. The higher the price of petrol goes, the more the big auto manufacturers are going to finally see the light and start actually building cars and vehicles that people can drive and drive, you know, sustainably on some other form of energy. And with extra tax, this is just like corporations. If you pollute, you pay. So if you drive a car and you pollute, you pay. If I use a gas-powered lawnmower, I pollute, I pay. And then those extra taxes go straight into development of greener fuels, of building the infrastructure for the way we are going to power our cities, towns, and lives away from oil, which constantly requires money and violence and war to keep us in enough of it. Just, you know, it just really, 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 really doesn't make sense when we, you know, constantly having these discussions in these little isolated pockets, you know, and only 3 minutes on a topic. You know, cafe standards, you know, I shocked a conservative friend of mine here in Australia because, you know, he said we were having discussions about how screwed up public transportation is here and everything else. And he said, you know, we really need to have, you know, the public transportation system improved. And I said, I totally agree. No argument from me. And I said, but it'd be really nice if there was efficiency standards in the automobile industry. And he goes, what do you mean it would be nice if there was? And I said, Australia doesn't have any. And then I went on to explain to him how the Bush administration rolled back the CAFE standards in the United States. So cars are now generally less fuel efficient than they were in the late 1970s. And it was like a huge bell went off in his head. Because, you know, he thinks that there shouldn't even be an auto industry in Australia, and I think he's got an argument there. Because at the moment, every single Australian pays $1,000 a year in income tax just to keep Holden in Australia. And to me, that's not free market stuff. That's subsidy. And I'm tired of seeing that subsidy going to a car company that constantly does nothing but build, you know, big utes, pickup trucks for you Americans, and eight-cylinder, you know, big throaty, I don't have a working penis, you know, super-fast cars that you have, you know, umpteen squillion horsepower to sit going nowhere in city traffic. But I just, you know, I just really reckon, you know, all this, the tax is not the problem. It's the supply. It's the manipulation by the speculators. It's Halliburton. It's Bush. It's Cheney. They're getting exactly what they want. Huge profits at our expense. And a little country down here like Australia and our, you know, bunch of ragtag fools that make up the useless opposition in this country. The best they can do is say, cut the tax, cut the tax, cut the tax. It's not going to change anything. And I bet there's similar conversations going on in the United States. People are hurting, trying to fill up their tanks. I know it sucks. I know it sucks. And I feel bad for the, you know, average everyday mom, dad, worker, student, whatever, who has to deal with, you know, I said it last night, having to choose between food and petrol or medicine and petrol. But we can only blame, you know, the lack of leadership that we've had and the lack of spine that we've had as a people to tell these people to pull their freaking finger out and get with the program. So we've ended up setting ourselves up for where we are. Like I said, you know, I'm so thankful that I gave up the bloody car. And yeah, sometimes it sucks having to wait for a train when it's delayed or it's over full. Or it might be raining when I have to walk, you know, the half a mile between my house and the train station. But you know what? I never have to pull into that just god-awful, you know, evil petrol bowser. You know, every time I go by, you know, a petrol station, there's all these poor sons of bitches with their SUVs and their huge cars all filling up, you know, all bloodshot, eyes straining, going, I can't believe it costs that much. And I sit there and think, yeah, and by what you're doing right there, you're supporting the continuation of war, you're supporting the continuation of damaging the very children that you say you bought this vehicle to protect. You know, that's my... Yeah, Tim, I do need to get a bike. I've been missing a bike for a long time. It's actually my favorite form of exercise. And yes, it's something that I do have to do. But I don't really mind. You know, I now have a fairly sedentary working life where I sit in front of a computer all day long. So if once a day or once every other day, you know, I got to take a walk up to the shops and back and all that. That's cool. That's totally cool with me. Get out, move around. Tim keeps laughing when I say petrol. Well, because it's only in America that you still call it gasoline. So you say gas here, and that's natural gas, right? It's petroleum here. But, you know, hey, I have lived here 10 years. I am going to pick up some of the language. Haven't seemed to be able to lose my accent, but that's a whole other thing. But, you know, anyway, what else did I have lined up before I go ranting? Oh, I can't find it. Oh, but, you know, sorry, I just got distracted by my browser doing something a little bit funny, but it's all good now. But, you know, really, it's time to be, you know, like, we constantly have all these conversations, and we never connect them. And that really frustrates me. It really frustrates me. And it's just a continuing pattern that I constantly see. And so, you know, overshadowing everything is this constant thing about, you know, everybody's dying when they go to fill up their SUVs. Well, you know, it's your stupid fault for buying that ridiculous vehicle out of some form of status. Get over it. Buy a mini wagon so you can cart around all the extra kids you had. I mean, I've had this conversation with some people. You know, They complain about this. They complain about that. And you say, but you chose to have that many children. That was your decision. Don't make me wear your decision. And just because you decided to have that many kids doesn't give you justification to go riding around in a planet-destroying vehicle. I know it's a really harsh thing to say. But, you know, I look at these population figures, and I'm glad that population growth is slowing. I mean, that's a good thing. Because the way that we're going, we're going to have massive war, massive famine over resources and water and oil if we don't change things drastically. Where we're going to end up cutting the population back in the most painful way. You know, by huge, you know, by death on a grand scale. Whether it's war, famine, disease. You know, and as the ugly head of genetically modified crops continues to rear its evil head, we're going to run into that too, where, no, you can't grow that because you haven't paid royalties on it yet. I mean, how insane has this planet gone? We allow people now to trademark, to patent the building blocks of life. And there was a piece that I actually have been meaning to get to all week, and I'll make a note to do, take care of it next week. A handful of companies have been patenting genes that they haven't even created. So we're now getting to like a thing where, you know, if you're the first one to identify, you can patent, then you own it. You didn't even create it. I mean, what happened to scientific discoveries, right? We used to have scientific discoveries, and the discovery would be made, and the science would become part of the global consciousness. This whole ownership crap. Being able to own absolutely everything. Absolutely everything. Who has the right? Who has the right to do that? I just find this lunacy where we're headed. Monsanto. If there were a devil and it were a corporation, that'd be it. We are going to trademark the building blocks of life, and unless you pay us, you can't have them. Even if you already have them, if we catch that you have something that we've put our name to, we can screw you. Just absolutely drives me nuts. We're coming up on the end of things. I want to remind everybody that, as Agnes mentioned during the horn section, tomorrow morning, 9:30 Eastern Time, there's a bit of a listening party in the Head On Radio Network chat room where we're going to listen to Mr. Scotty McClellan's testimony in front of Congress, which could prove to be very, very interesting. And I think he'll try and play a little bit of the spin doctor that he is. But I really do think he's going to be pretty open and honest and kind of let it all ride out. He'll try to do some saving face for himself, but it could be very interesting. So bring your coffee, bring your breakfast. If you're in some other part of the world, you know, it could be cocktail time, bring the popcorn. It could be fun. And if I'm still up, I will join you. Because that'll be in the wee hours of the morning over here in Australia, and so that should be really good. And I really do want to remind everybody, you know, Ben Birch is running his first fundraiser in like 4 years. He hasn't asked for anything 4 years, unlike the Horn, who you know, we're constantly needing your support. But Ben really, at the moment, is, you know, I would like to see you all go and drive a bit there. I'm about to, because without Ben, not only would the horn not be happening, but there's so much other really great content out there that we wouldn't be able to get access to the way that we do if it weren't for Ben Birch and the White Rose Society. So whiterosesociety.org, go over, drop what you can, whether it's $5, $10. If you can do more, that'd be great. Because, you know, we just could not possibly do this without him. And also I have to say thank you to Ben for his offers of assistance with the web problems that we've had this week. He's about the only person I know that actually could have helped. And I do appreciate that. And so I was informed in the middle of the shears that there in the middle of the show that there actually was a Billy Shears segment for this week, and somehow it slipped me by. My apologies, Billy. We will do it next week. My bad. In all the chaos, it obviously slipped by me. So I want to thank Agnes Kincaid for producing today. Thank you so much. It's been great having you back the last couple of days. Still like a reoccurring acid flashback.